Life is full of awesome what ifs, and some not so much, like unexpected medical costs. That's why United Healthcare provides Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans to supplement your primary plan and help manage out of pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Standing by, the Terry and Ted podcast is sponsored by the UPS Store Canada.
Shall I do our jingle?
If you'd like.
No, it's okay. I don't think it. I'm making a reference to an earlier episode where I thought we could use podcast jingles.
Terry and Ted Singers.
Yeah. Terry and Ted podcast. Nah. No.
We could talk about
2 seconds before Poseidon pushed record, Ted thought he would have
a drink of water, and it all went down the front of
my head. Yeah.
I swear to God, I haven't had a drink of alcohol in 26 years.
Well, you were saying the other day, part of it is, what did you say? You were out with somebody, and they said, you said to her, you know, when I eat now, food falls out of my nose.
And she said, I know. Haven't heard from her lately.
Oh, really? Yeah. I'm Terry DeMonte. That's Ted Bird. It's the Standing By podcast. And today, we're going to introduce you to a very interesting guest in just a moment. But before we get started, we're going to start with a big, big thank you to the UPS Store Canada, our title sponsor. Ted actually took me out to Il Poro the other day. We went to visit one of the locations that's run by Jason Liverman. And we got the tour of the place. Ted had some packing peanuts. Apparently not as delicious as they sounded.
They're a bit dry.
Yeah.
Yeah. They could have used some salt.
The UPS store is run by entrepreneurs in your community. There's over 380 locations across the country. So wherever you're listening to this podcast, if you need help with your business that you may be running out of home, or if you just need to send something to the kids at university on the other side of the country, the UPS store can help you. They can help you with a move. They helped us with our move years ago, a couple of years ago. You need to pack up the extra things that didn't make it onto the moving truck. The UPS store can help you with that. They can help you with packing materials, boxes. They have mailboxes. If you want to have an address for your business that isn't at your home, which is really a good idea from a security point of view, they can help you with that. They can even take a passport photo. Every business problem that you need solved, they can help you with. Go to the website and look at their blog. They even help you with marketing, printing services. They even have, I know nobody uses a fax anymore, but if you need to use a fax, they can help you with that too. And of course, courier services and parcel receiving too. You can have stuff shipped to a UPS store. Find one near you online at theupsstore.ca. They are our title sponsor. Ted, would you like to introduce our guest?
I sure would. Chris Ramsey is a social media sensation. He is on YouTube with a mere 7.7 million subscribers. He's on Instagram with 500,000 followers. He's a magician. He's a comedian. I don't know what a person who does card tricks is called. Card trickster doesn't sound like it.
Yeah, magician's fine.
Yeah, magician is good. Yep. Chris had me on his podcast, the Bottom of the Barrel podcast, several weeks ago with, I'm gapping on Wes's last name,
Barker.
Yeah, Wes Barker. And as I was leaving Chris's studio that night, he said, hey, if you ever need a guest on your podcast, let me know. There's a big mistake on your part, because here you are.
Yeah, we'll see about that.
It was a rhetorical comment.
The Bottom of the Barrel doesn't refer to the guest, does it?
I don't know. Not in that case.
we made an exception. He needed somebody in a pinch, and I was available, so I was happy to go up. That was a lot of fun that night.
Yeah, it was great.
I really enjoyed that. Chris has got a beautiful, beautiful studio up in Saint-Sauveur, a nice part of the country, and a lovely studio, and we had some fun. And is your brother who produces it, who's the technical producer?
Yep, my younger brother brought him on. So he's the producer. He also does shipping in the warehouse and stuff, so he wears many hats.
Uh-huh.
Yeah, but he loves it. He's a big fan of podcasts in general, so to have him on, he just loves it.
Is that your one and only podcast, Chris, or do you have others?
I do have another that we just started for my new channel, Area 52, which deals with like conspiratorial stuff and like aliens and stuff. So we got one there called Debriefed, but there's only one episode up there.
That's another element of your online persona, for lack of a better term. But we'll get to that after. I want to start with the, I guess with what launched you to such stratospheric levels of internet infamy. Did it start with the card tricks?
Yeah, I guess you could say it started with card tricks. I worked for a company called Murphy's Magic. They're the largest wholesaler of magic tricks, and they needed this online presence, right? So they were like, "Hey, do you want to come work for us?" Because I had already been dabbling online.
What
and
year
stuff.
Was this, Chris? Sorry to interrupt.
This was 2012, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah. And so they're like, "Do you want to come, you know, work for us and handle our social media?" And so I was like, "Sure, I don't know anything about it. I don't know anything about cameras. I had a phone at the time that could film, and that was it."
But you had established enough of a presence that you caught their attention.
Yep, exactly. I'd released a few marketed magic tricks to the magic community, and that kind of caught their attention. And so then I hosted a show for them reviewing magic products. And quickly grew their subscriber count to 100,000 in like 6 months, and on this at the same time I had started my own channel, so simultaneously sort of growing my own portfolio, and then I got picked up by another magic company, the biggest retailer. So I went to them, did the same thing for them, and then at that point I was making the same amount of money on the side as I was making, you know, working for them, which I believe at the time I was making like $50,000 a year, which was a great pay for me. You know, I was very happy making that. And I said, that's all I needed was like 50 grand a year to like make a living. So I quit the job. And I was like, I think I was like 2 or 3 months away from like making $5,000 a month, but I could see the number. And it was just enough for me to be like, I quit. I'm doing this on my own. And then as soon as I devoted all my time there, it just kind of went straight up.
What do you attribute that success to, Chris? It's hard to quantify. You know, like as old school broadcast guys, you know, we look at something and we go, that's going to draw a lot of eyeballs. That's got quality content. What is it like when you're concocting content for these companies and for these channels? Is there a formula, or do you just do it by gut and watch the results come in, and then you know that works?
Well, there is that. There is like the whole algorithm, you know, thing that you have to pay attention to. But I would say more importantly is you have to look. Let's say if this was if YouTube was like a network, right? If you want to take it in broadcast terms, if YouTube was a network and every channel was a different TV show,
okay,
you would have to make it so that yours stands out. So to do that, you got to look at the market, look what's happening, and fill in the gap, right? And the people who've successfully done that, whether it's a company or a TV channel or a YouTube channel or whatever it is, or a radio show, you can see it, you can say, oh, that's smart. This was a natural gap that they filled in that people wanted. I didn't try to overtake something that was already taken. I created a new sort of market in this gap. And so this gap for me was there was no quality content on magic for magicians. It was mostly lame videos of people's crotches with cards and stuff. So there was nothing great about it. So I was like, well, how great would it be if there was like this, you know, sort of cool, hip spokesperson who was funny and you know, sort of just more down to earth rather than, you know, we're coming out of TV now, and TV, everything was so scripted and rehearsed, and it's just a breath of fresh air for a lot of people. To have like honest opinions. And so when I saw that gap, I was like, oh, I'm going to do this. I already see it playing out. And then it took over.
So you identify that gap.
Yeah.
And then how long is it before, you know, you think, okay, I think there's the gap, and you do videos to address that gap. How quickly do you know that you've nailed it?
I think you know fairly quickly.
You do.
Yeah, I think so.
And is it just based on views and comments and whatnot?
Yeah.
Is that the metric? Yeah.
Not only that, I think you know it.
You just feel it?
Yeah, I think so. I think a lot of people, yeah. I think when you know something's good, you just know.
Yeah.
And the people around you know, and you can all sort of feel that buzz. And I had the same feeling with puzzles that there was this giant gap here, and people like seeing puzzles. So I was like, all right, let's try this. And that blew up. And, you know, now with my new venture, I feel the same sort of buzz. So
how did you know that about puzzles? What was it about puzzles that you thought was a draw?
Sorry to interrupt you, Chair. That's what I meant to say off the top. It was puzzles. I got it wrong. I said card tricks. It was puzzles that launched you, right?
No, I started with card tricks.
Oh, did you? Yep, okay. I got my first, okay, never mind. I didn't say any of that.
Yeah.
Card tricks. Card tricks. Yeah, it was card tricks.
It was magic.
Sorry, man.
We'll edit that.
No, yeah. 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 Puzzles came a few years after. But again, I saw the stagnant sort of magic market. Starting, like, I mean, I grew an audience. I created an audience that wasn't interested in magic, that got interested. But after a while, you start losing more followers than you're gaining because not everybody wants to be a magician and not everybody wants to watch three magic videos in a row. And so I was like, well, how can I pivot the skills that I've learned in video making and magic that still makes sense to my audience? And puzzles was just naturally, like, I look at puzzles, logic games like chess as well, or escape games. These things all play in the same realm as magic.
So were you a puzzle guy? Like, were you a puzzle guy when you were a kid?
Nope, not more than anyone else.
When I think of puzzles, I think of the family at Christmas with the,
you know, jigsaw puzzle.
Jigsaw puzzle on the table that the family all tries to do, and eventually somebody just throws it on the floor. It's like, fuck this, I can't do this anymore. So did you, like, were you fascinated by puzzles, or did you think, puzzles, people will love this?
So I had gone to see my friends in San Diego. They have a store called Art of Play, where they have just a bunch of whimsical, magical items, like things that are illusions or things that don't work the way they're supposed to, and they're funny, and they're, you know, they're cool to look at or play with. And in one of their windows, there was this small, like, lock, like just a regular lock with a key. And I was like, why is that in there? He's like, oh, it's a puzzle. And my brain didn't really understand what he was saying to me. I was like, how's that a puzzle? I don't understand. You know, it's not a box. It's not a jigsaw. And he's like, no, it's a puzzle. You got to, you know, unlock the key or whatever. And I was like, huh. A few months later, I emailed him and I was like, can I get one of those? I was just curious about it. And he's like, well, it's this guy in Israel. He makes them. And you have to write him an email. Maybe he'll make one for you. We don't know. You know, so I was like, okay, write him an email. He made one. He sent one over. And I was like, I was down on some content that week. And I was like, you know what? Let's just pop this up. I think it's adjacent. There are methods here when magicians love how things work. So let me try it out. And that video went bananas at the time. So I was like, oh, there's a whole thing. So I started researching the puzzle community online to find out that there isn't any, really. There are these blogs and these outdated, you know, sort of websites, but there was nobody making content about puzzles. So from there, I just started ordering more and doing them more and more and more and getting more elaborate to eventually, you know, having them done for me, like a creative for me, so I can solve them. And
sounds to me like as much as being skilled as a magician, you've got some pretty serious marketing chops, and you must have to have those to stand out from the clutter on the internet, which you've been able to do.
Yeah,
I don't think that happens by mistake.
I think you got to consume a lot of the internet to understand what's missing from it. And so, as much as that's a talent, it's a very sad talent to have. But yes, I've consumed much like of the internet.
It sounds like a lot of legwork too.
A lot of thumb work.
Yeah.
But yeah, definitely, you know, just recognizing patterns. I think you know, and looking, especially with YouTube, they give you all the analytics. And so, you know, you have Mr. Beast talk about this to a lot of creators, and it's very true. Like, all the data is there, and this is way more data than anyone had in broadcast or in TV or in movies, because they're so specific to the individual.
What does the data tell you?
Everything. It tells you everything with ads, with Google AdWords and everything. I can know that my fans, there's 30% of them that also enjoy playing Xbox, you know, and then I can tell what region they're in, and I can have all this personal information. Whereas, you know, you look at the Super Bowl was and still is one of the most expensive places to put an ad, because they know for a fact, well, maybe not anymore, but they know for a fact that men who like beer and sports are watching TV. That they know. Otherwise, you can't really tell. You'd have to put out some weird poll or something, or, you know, whatever it is they do, but you wouldn't know for sure who's watching or how many people are watching your show. But with the internet and like Facebook and YouTube, you can know exactly what type of person, how long they watch, when they prefer watching it, when they skip through, when they stop watching, when they, you know, all of this information. So if you translate that and apply it to your content, you will get better. It will get better.
Is it that specific that you're able to use that information? So you put out a video, you look at the analytics, and you look at, okay, people became bored at the 4-minute mark. What was I doing there?
Sure.
I'm going to eliminate that from the next one.
Yep. Yeah, there's a lot of that.
Shit.
There's a lot of that. There's a lot of, and it works. There's a lot of also just click-through rate. So like, you know, what percentage of your audience is clicking a thumbnail? Or are they exiting the app after seeing your video? Are they watching another video? Like all these, there's so many analytics you can look into. So
and you're able to use them efficiently.
Yeah. And everybody is, everybody has the same data. You know, I don't have more data than anyone else. So it's like, it's all there. But I too feel like sometimes I'm like, no, the audience doesn't get me. This is my best work. You know, I get that too. And yeah, I get frustrated as well, just like everybody else. But you know, you got to look at it really objectively. The numbers are there. So they're not going to lie to you.
You're creating angst in me because you remind me of a radio consultant. Because this is from another era, but when we were on the radio, you know, they would bring in a consultant to listen to the show, who would listen to the show and then meet with us afterwards and say, you know, when you and Ted talked about the nuns this morning, you talked for 4 minutes and 38 seconds. And we have research that shows that if you go past the 4-minute mark, you will lose the audience. Mm. And I used to say, fuck you.
Yeah.
If it's compelling and it's interesting, how do you know that people are not stuck in traffic with a stopwatch?
Yeah.
You either bore them or you don't.
Yep.
But
what you're saying is true.
Yeah, but you're telling me that, and a friend of mine would agree with you, that data don't lie.
Right. The data doesn't lie. Like, I mean, if you were to, let's say if you were to talk about this 4.5-minute nun story, which I want to hear, by the way, now. but a 4.5-minute story about these nuns, and it's compelling.
Yeah.
Give that to an editor, you know, who's going to trim it down to 3 minutes with edits every 3 seconds and this and that, which I don't like doing, by the way. I also like storytelling. But you will see the viewer retention be a lot higher and the drop-off be a lot lower, and that's just natural. That's, you know, we can figure that out now because of the internet.
Yeah, and especially I think now, like I'm telling a story from, you know, 1999.
Yeah, he might have been full of shit back then.
Yeah, and the year 2000, where I think even in the year 2000, people's attention spans were a little longer than they are
now. That is true. That
is
very
true. Because it's one of the things that we know. I even noticed myself.
Oh, dude.
I used to love to pick up a book and read. And I'm having a hard time doing that these days because I think my attention span has been shrunk by the exposure to the internet.
Yep.
And I think that's true of things on the internet, which is really bad news for our podcast.
Especially our podcast.
Yeah, podcasts are interesting in themselves because they are they kind of go against everything on the internet. Which is really interesting. They're long. A lot of them are long-winded. They don't have a catchy title.
Yeah.
They're 2 hours long. You know what I mean? There's like every reason not to watch a podcast is there, and yet people still tune in.
I live in the Vancouver area. I'm in Canada's second largest media market, and radio is so terrible. I never leave the house without a podcast, and I find that's true, whereas I would be punching around on the radio going, shut up, shut up, shut up.
Right.
With a podcast, they're with me for the drive.
Yep. And they're when you want to pick it back up.
Yeah, exactly. So maybe that's part of it. I'm fascinated by your ability to manipulate the data, but use the data to build that, you know. And it sounds to me like, and I want to talk to you about this, I'll get to this. Because we have to take a break. But I want to get to this because there is a cost, I think, to diving so deep on the internet.
Sure.
And I are you okay to talk about that?
Of course, yeah.
Okay.
I'm overwhelmed. I couldn't
So am I. I'm fascinated.
Like, talking about the numbers and crunching them and breaking them down.
Yeah.
I can't do that. That's beyond my...
It's not our bailiwick, as
I guess,
were.
Yeah.
So because we... We go to
We're too busy telling 4 minute and 38 second stories about nuns. and then we sit back and go, yeah, that was pretty good.
Yeah, we're great. Yeah. It's Pantelis that breaks them down for us.
But I'm definitely in between like the new generation and you guys, I feel, because there is a part of me that doesn't give everything, you know, doesn't give this algorithm all the credit. And I don't enjoy a lot of the algorithm work. You know what I mean?
You know what? It pays off because it's the difference between 7.7 million YouTube subscribers and however many hundred or thousand people listen to our podcast.
But I know that if I leaned in more, I could double that number. But really? I choose not. Wow. Jesus, that's the other thing.
Lean in more.
Why not hire somebody who can lean in more and do that for you?
It's not fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You want to do it.
I make a living, and the people that work for me all have jobs, and they're all close friends or family. So it's like they get to work in a cool environment. I don't want to jeopardize that.
Okay, so you're happy with where it's at.
I'm very happy with doing what it is that I love doing as long as I can continue doing it. If the day comes where I have to do something I don't like, then I'll have to ask myself if it's worth doing it all. So
reassess.
I don't know how this works. And I was going to say, how often does a check come? Welcome to 1980. But you
15th and the 31st.
Yeah, yeah.
It's like being married every 15th and the 31st.
Does that go straight to Venmo? What is that?
YouTube pays you.
Yeah, YouTube Canada. Yeah,
yeah. YouTube pays you based on views.
Mm-hmm.
Right? Is that the way it works?
Yeah, I mean, if you want to put it like that, but there's like all these metrics that go into, you have a CPM, which is like how much you make per thousand views. And that number is based on all the other data.
And they tell you that every month, and then money goes in every month.
Yeah. Every video has a different CPM.
Okay.
And so depending on the content, but at the end of the month, yes, you get a check.
CPM.
Yep. Yeah. Clicks per mil.
Thank you.
There you go.
Okay. Yeah. All right. We going to take a quick moment to tell you about a new sponsor that we're very excited about. Because he's a personal friend, and I think he's a genius. Sugar Sammy called me and said, I want to sponsor the podcast. And I was so beyond thrilled. I can't begin to tell you how excited I was. Number one, because I know him. He's a longtime friend. And we met him when he was still taken to the bus to the gigs.
Yep.
Back in the early 1400s.
That's right.
We've known him for a very, very long time, and take a little bit of sense of pride. What's the matter?
Chris needs to turn his the vibration off on his phone.
Oh, phone?
Okay. Yeah, it's coming That's through on me. The no.
Oh, it's me. Look at me.
All right. You're fired. How you guys are playing this?
Sorry, man. I threw you under the bus, and it wasn't you.
I'm the young guy with all the texting.
Well, we figured nobody ever calls us. I figured it must be you.
Yeah, I got no friends.
There's a rotary phone out in the lobby.
Yeah, it's got to be. It's got to be phishing scam of some kind.
There you go.
For sure. Anyway, we're telling you about Sugar Sammy, and when Sammy called me and said I want to sponsor the podcast, I said what why. And he said, because I like what you do, I like being part of it, and I want you to tell people about my show. We saw the show. The bilingual show is groundbreaking. It really broke new ground when it comes to the world of comedy, because there were many, many people that said to him, you're nuts. You're not going to get people to come to the show who understand French and English. Mm. And he's from a generation where he said, I don't think so. I think there's a lot of people in Montreal who understand both languages and will come from les deux côtés. And that's exactly what happened. He broke a lot of ground, sold so many tickets, and is now doing Juste pour rire deux across the country. Ted and I saw it. How would you describe it, Ted?
Well, it was classic Sugar Sammy, for one thing. You know Sammy.
Yeah,
do you know Sammy?
Or I don't know,
or
personally.
Know of him.
Yeah. I know of him, yeah.
Yeah, he's, well, if you've seen him, then you know him.
Mm.
He's the same person on stage that he is off the stage, which to me is, and in what we do, it's the same thing. It's key to success, I think.
Yeah.
It's what makes you interesting and compelling. And he's got that, and we talked about this, Chris, when I was on your podcast and we were talking about stand-up. He's got that combination of, well, along with being brilliantly funny, he's got that combination of confidence and likability.
Yeah.
And even when he's tearing someone in the audience to shreds, he's doing it in such a likable way It's unbelievable. He's a very unique talent.
He drops that microphone after he's done stinging someone, and a big smile comes across his face.
Yeah, you can't help but like him.
It really is a terrific, terrific show, and it's on now, and you have to act now. I think it'd make a great Christmas present. We're recording these in October, and he's currently on tour in theaters across the country. So he's doing it in Winnipeg and Vancouver. I'm going to see him this coming weekend in Vancouver. I'm very excited.
And he's doing the bilingual show.
Yes.
Wow. In the western part of
very,
the country.
Very, very ballsy, very cool. But tickets sell out so fast. So he's announced new dates in 2024. January's already sold out. So if you're planning on seeing him, and you should, you've got to get to sugarsammy.com and get your tickets now.
February shows in Montreal are on sale, but they'll go fast as well. So get to sugarsammy.com in a big fat hurry. And you know what else is great about Sammy is that we put him on our radio show when he was, as you said, taking
on the bus.
And he never forgot that.
Yeah.
He never forgot that. He never forgets who helped him along the way. When I was working at that little country radio station over in Ganawage, where we broadcast out of a trailer with no running water, and if I had to use the can, I went to the portalette outside. He came over and did a show with me one day.
Unbelievable. Well, unbelievable.
It's, that's Sammy. That's him all over. He never forgot.
Yeah. We're continuing our conversation with Chris, and we're talking about the interweb and his very successful use of the webnet, as we like to call it.
Intranet.
The internet.
The intranet.
Very, very fancy. I want to ask you, because last night when I was reading up on you, Chris, because I admit I had to read up on you, because I'm not a puzzle guy and I'm not a magic guy. So it took me, I thought, this is really, and the more I've followed and watched the videos, more fascinated I became. And then I clicked on a video of you in March where you were expressing to your fans that this is a tough gig.
Yeah.
And you were saying it in such a way that made me sympathetic. And you weren't saying, woe is me. You were just being honest and authentic with your audience, which I think is a big part of your success. And it struck me that doing what you do and what you have to do in order to be successful at it and diving as deep as you dive has a cost. Mm. Am I right about that?
Yeah, absolutely. I think anyone who puts themselves out there as much as I do, there is a certain expectation of
it's constant every day people are looking.
That's the thing. It's like these people, as much as a lot of people put out there like, hey, look at my perfect life, look at all this stuff.
Yeah.
That's the classic, trope of any content creator is like, this isn't really them and whatnot. But to go the opposite of that, it's not really in your favor to talk about all the shitty stuff that comes with it all the time. Cause now you just sound like you're complaining. Now it just sounds like, this guy's got everything. He's crying. Look at me. Like I got a hard job and this guy's got so you don't want to complain cause for fear of, and rightfully so. Cause people out there working very hard, very long hours with, all these other problems in their lives, so you don't want to come off as complaining, but you also don't want to hide that and just pretend everything's fine because then you're propagating that same problem, which is guys at home looking at his phone or girl and they're like, oh, my life's so shit in comparison. You know what I mean? So I want to express that there are, things content creators deal with, things that I've dealt with, depression being, one for years I've battled with depression. And, to have that, it's just a really hard place to be. I don't want to get views because I'm depressed either.
No.
Yeah. So it's this real catch 22. You got to.
What's the mental toll of, because I know my reference point is radio. So when I was starting out in radio, you'd answer the phone and someone, you'd say, hi, show them good morning or hi, City FM when I was working in Winnipeg. And the voice on the other end would say, you fucking suck, you piece of shit, and hang up.
Mm.
And as a 20-year-old...
Dad?
as a 20-year-old broadcaster,
yeah,
I would spiral.
I right. think, fuck, I can't do this. I don't know what I'm doing. I'm yeah. obviously terrible at what I do. As a 50-year-old broadcaster, you know that's just one person who's, you know, angry in their own life or whatever, and you dismiss right. it. But you have to look at, oh, my God, I've lost X amount of subscribers. Mm-hmm. And you look at the comments, and now it's kind of like phoning a radio station. You can hide behind that. You don't have to be accountable. You're a keyboard warrior,
yep.
and you can tell people, you know, your fucking videos suck, you yep. piece of shit. Mm-hmm. Does that take the kind of toll that I think it does?
Not for me. That's never really
bothered
me.
That's not what triggered that video?
No. For me, it was the, you know, that type of stuff's kind of like you have to deal with right at the start. And you got to kind of, I mean, I had this whatever vision I had for what I wanted to do. And I told myself, if I'm going to listen to the good comments, then I have to listen to the bad ones. So I chose not to listen to any of them. So if somebody praised me, I was like, cool, thanks. And if somebody said, hey, you should do more of this, I'd be like, cool, thanks. But I wouldn't do more of that. I'd do whatever I wanted to do, because otherwise I'd start straying and listening to the audience. And that's where I think, you know, you start to spiral. So for me, I think the hardest part was, just realizing that I can't do this forever. I can't keep it up forever at the pace that I was, doing it. Because, you know, you'd see the numbers falling and then you're like, you're wondering, well, is it me? Is it me they don't like? You know, it's sort of the same realm, but you're looking at the numbers. But it for me, it was more realizing that everything's algorithm based.
And what does that mean?
It means the algorithm determines everything. It determines what you see every day, what you read, what
you mean
video.
The YouTube algorithm?
I mean algorithms in general.
In general.
Yeah.
So are they random or are they?
Algorithms are very, very specific.
Based,
yeah,
they? Yeah.
They are. They're filled with so many different.
And what do the makers of them base them on?
Many things and any number of things. Maybe an uncountable number of things. But the thing that everyone's trying to do is optimize content,
yeah.
right? And so when a machine looks at content, it sees numbers, right? It sees viewer retention, it sees watch time, it sees click-through ratio, all of these things, right? And so it will always favor someone who is more manipulative of this, of the stuff it likes, right? So I could make videos that I don't enjoy doing and be like, hey, whoa, check this out. Wop, 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 bam, 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 explosion. You know, keep all this going just to keep their attention, because right now, you know, we used to post videos. People used to watch the whole videos. And now, like you said, attention span has gotten shorter and shorter. So the videos have to be more elaborate, more crazy. Bigger budget. They have to be shorter, which means you're making less money. They have to be, you know, in front of more people. So you have to make them a certain way. And because everyone who is watching social media is also a performer, and nowadays, like everyone watching a show is also a performer. Everybody's got an Instagram and they're a performer in their own right. So it's constant optimization. Up until the point where it's just this soulless
This is why
video.
The yelling and the screaming gets shared more times and attracts more eyeballs. Like, for example, I tell Ted, when we post a video on our little Facebook page for Standing By, any video that takes you off of the Facebook platform, Facebook buries.
Of course.
Because they don't want you off the platform.
No, yeah.
Right? And it's the same thing with crazy, angry, spitting mad, you know, people shooting guns or, you know, some of the horrific things we saw from Israel in this past week.
Yep.
Those get eyeballs. So the algorithm rewards that.
Exactly.
And the algorithm goes, holy shit, people are watching this. Let's spit this out more.
And
right?
It has nothing to do, like before, algorithm before was based around like community. So as a creator, like if I was here, my community would be around me. I would grow this community, right? And then maybe it would touch another creator and our communities would sort of mingle and I'd be able to grow this community. Communities now are all based around algorithms.
Shit.
So this is the algorithm.
Right.
and this is the community. So now you're not getting, if you watch one of my puzzle videos, you're not getting another one of my puzzle videos. You're getting another puzzle video because the algorithm thinks you like puzzles.
Shit.
Right. This is all it's turned into. It's all machine based.
It's
now.
Like the algorithm is your boss.
It's
weird.
We're slaves to it. We have to obey the rules of the algorithm or else you die. So, like I said before, creators were rewarded with their community and it was nice. It was a nice pocket. It lasted maybe 5 years, but we all loved it because we all grew so immensely. But now anybody can take a trend and get a billion views, right? So why would YouTube, knowing that this video is getting a billion views, why would they share my video when they can just bring people toward what's already getting views? And so if people are basing their communities around trends, around algorithms, the creators are kind of left out and we're left to adapt. We have to now do this mindless, soulless work that we don't enjoy and we complain about it, which we sound like a bunch of babies. But it's like, hey, I did this because I love it, and I'm not sure I do anymore, you know?
Does it feel like treading water? Like you have to keep treading,
absolutely.
Treading.
I mean, there's more and more creators Jesus every day. Christ. You go to a school, you know, and ask 20 kids what they want to be when they grow up.
Yeah.
It's not athlete. It's not movie star anymore. It's blogger, influencer, YouTuber, influencer,
my
creator.
My son, Sam, I showed you one or two of his videos. That's what Sam wants to be. He wants to be a creator, whether it's on the internet or as a television showrunner or in the movie industry. He wants to be a creator. He wants to create content. So when that change that you talked about where communities were intermingling before and now they're not and it's all built around the algorithm.
Yeah.
Did that happen because YouTube made it happen? And did YouTube make it happen because it was to their benefit? Like what triggered that? Is that the short explanation?
They're just looking for optimal statistics, right? Okay. Optimal analytics. And so they figured out that okay, this is optimal. And good for them, you know, but it does hurt the creators. Yeah. With the same hand, it does give everybody a chance. It's just that people, you know, are so quick to hop on these trends now. It's like, oh, this is a trend, so we're going to do that video because it's a trend.
Is that short-term thinking, do you think, on YouTube's part? Is that just short-term? Like, there's a dollar right there. There's $10 over there, but I'm going to grab this dollar because it's right here.
Well, they're competing with TikTok. And I think last year, for the first year, TikTok had more watch time hours than YouTube. And that sort of woke them up to short form content a little bit more. And then they created shorts. And so, you know, to compete with other platforms, I think they have to.
Is everybody chasing the same dog though? Because, you know, when I think of platforms, I think of, you know, and again, this is old timey thinking, but you know, when network television was a thing, PBS sort of did this, and you knew if you went there, you got this, right? If I go to TikTok, I know what I'm getting. But if I want to watch 60 Minutes Australia, I go to YouTube.
Yeah.
You know, if I want to see, you know, if the other day Ted lent me his car and I couldn't get the goddamn gas door open, I went to YouTube.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
It's an electric car. That's why.
So, you know, like I'm wondering if, you know, is... like a lot of businesses do, they look over there and go, "Hey, they're doing more than we are. Let's do that." Like, is YouTube abandoning? Is everybody chasing the same dog? Is what I'm asking.
I think it feels like that, but also I think if you just look at the numbers, I think it just makes more sense. We're getting to an optimal way of receiving information and entertainment. You know, you look at TikTok. You ask kids, any kid who's like under 20, ask them. You know, when we say we'll Google it, kids use TikTok as a search engine.
Wow.
We use YouTube to be like, oh, how do I change a tire?
Yeah.
They want the same video, but in 40 seconds.
Fuck.
This is what's happening.
Crazy.
All the kids. They will look it up on TikTok first. And I can't blame them because it's faster. They get the information quicker. And someone's out there taking your 20-minute video and making it into a minute and giving me the bare bones that I need. And so it's all about optimization.
I have to admit, the other day when I was looking up the gas cap thing, the first one I clicked on was a guy going, "Well, today I'm going to tell you."
Fast forward, yeah. Exactly. But that's so. Again,
just
I can't
tell
blame.
Me how to open the goddamn
gas. Exactly. Yeah. I can't really blame YouTube for it.
Right.
It's just that, creators. you know, who had this idea of, I can make a living. It's really hard now for anyone to come into that space.
Are you still, like, have you been able to keep up the pace? Are you still able to make the same kind of living you've been making?
Definitely not the same type as in the first few years. That was like the golden age. Yeah. But we're fine. Like, we're still making a living. Yeah. We just, I have to rely on multiple sources of income a little more. So we have our shop. We have the YouTube channel. I got Facebook, brand deals. You know,
and so you that's what I guess that's what triggered the video that I watched. You feel the pressure of that.
Yeah. Where now it's like, okay, I don't get to make what I want to make anymore.
Yeah. Shit.
Yeah. Just because that's the rules. Those are the rules now.
It's funny, Chris, because I think of you, you know, I'm thinking in, again, in terms of, you know, 1940s economics where the people who came and brought you, you know, like YouTube and their creators, you would think that they would want to collaborate with their creators, but the world is too big and too crazy now. They just move on from you.
Yeah.
Right.
And it moves on fast.
And it moves on fast. Yeah. And they're, you know, you look after your employees.
Yeah.
But they're like, okay, well, fuck you. We've moved on.
Of course. And I don't blame them for that. I'm not in the slightest upset at YouTube.
But it's a lot. It must be a lot of pressure.
I mean, it definitely, you know, it's definitely something I think about because I'm, again, like, for me, the most important thing out of all of this is the people around me are taken care of. That is the most important thing. Like, I could not care. I'll be fine. You know what I mean? I could retire. I could retire and I could be fine. I could live a modest life and just be okay.
Yeah.
And that would be fine with me. But
how old are you?
39.
Jesus Christ.
Chris, what was the reaction to the video that Terry mentioned where you demonstrated that vulnerability? What feedback did you get off that?
It was great. It was really well received. You know, and I was scared uploading it because it was very vulnerable and didn't have all those cuts and edits to make you feel good. And and so, but the reaction was incredible. You know, anytime a creator opens up online, I encourage it because it just shows the audience that, hey, we're going through something, you know, and those people who are going through it understand. And so it gives them a voice. It gives them, it makes them feel like they're seen as well. Cause a lot of people are going through similar, you know, scenarios with their mental health and they just, you know, they feel like, oh, someone's talking real shit now. They're not just trying to get me to hit a button.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
You know.
How far ahead do you have to work, Chris? Like, you know, Ted and I will start talking about this season of episodes 3 weeks in advance. We're going to book Chris. We'll have Bobby. We make sort of plans. How often, if you're a daily creator, how far ahead are you working? We're going to do this puzzle on Thursday, and then we'll shoot this on Wednesday. We'll edit that on Friday. Like, how far ahead do you have to go?
I'm like a week, maybe. Really? Maybe. Well, it's even a couple days.
And what's your output, every day?
No. It used to be three videos a week, long-form videos a week, plus the shorts, plus all the other photos and content you want to do. But now we're down like one a week, and I've just dialed it back. I just couldn't keep up with the pace of anything anymore.
Yeah.
And
have you noticed a drop off?
Definitely.
Really?
Yeah, definitely.
Wow.
But again, for me, it's like, hey, like I can't please the whole world all the time and the algorithm and everything.
How long did it take you to come to that realization?
Years.
To be accepting of that.
Years. It only started hitting me when the numbers started dropping, honestly, and as selfish as that sounds. Like, you know, at first, everything was great.
You take it personally.
I can do whatever I want, they're paying me.
Take it personally.
Yeah, now I'm like, well, it's me. Yeah. And so, you know, getting over that took a little bit, but I found, you know, this place in my mind where I'm like, well, kind of like whatever happens, happens. We're going to keep doing what we love doing. We'll slow it down just so nobody gets burned out. And yeah, do our best to just take care of everyone.
It's going to be great to be in a place where you have the resources. You just said you could retire if you wanted to have the resources to be able to do what you want and still know that that's going to generate an income and take care of the people around you.
Yeah.
That sounds like a pretty good place to be to
Absolutely.
Me, even if it's a drop off from where you were before.
And that's why I said I'll never complain about that as long as the people around me are taken care of. If for whatever reason they can't be, then, that'll hurt me a lot more than, it would if my channel got taken away or something.
I'm curious about the, and forgive me, I'm not prying and I don't mean to pry, but I'm curious about the old school world of, like, for example, banks.
Mm-hmm.
Do you write YouTube creator on anything? Do you deal with banks? Do banks go, I don't know what that is. No, you can't have any money.
At first.
Really, eh?
Well, at first, there was no category.
Yeah.
Because
they didn't understand.
Well, you have to take a loan or whatever it is.
Yeah, that's what
they got a list that they click on.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I don't fall in that list.
You
they're
do
like,
what?
They're like movies and TV. I'm like, no. And then the expenses, because I can, if it's in a video, it's an expense.
Yeah.
So I can write off a lot,
But it must have been a new landscape for like the CRA and for banks and
definitely, especially for banks.
Yeah, I make videos at home.
Yeah,
really?
It's funny because at first I was coming out for a loan. They're like, "What do you do?" They're like, "Oh, cool." and they're like, "Do we need someone to co-sign this guy?" And they're, so I was trying to get the whatever, and then I remember this is like back again, like at the peak of YouTube, and he's like, "All right, well, how much do you make?" And I told him, and he's like,
"What?
A year?" I was like, "No, it's last month." And his face just changed. Like you saw him, he's sitting there in a tie and everything, and he's ready to tell me no for this loan.
Yeah.
And he just went like, "Oh," and everything just came collapsing in his head. Like it was like this crazy moment I saw in his face where he just realized something new. Like, this is a whole new world that I didn't know about. It was like groundbreaking to him.
Yeah.
And it felt kind of good as someone who worked shitty jobs my whole life.
That's really cool, actually.
Yeah, it felt really, really cool.
They don't have the hammer anymore.
Yeah, exactly.
They're like, "Oh, you have dough." Yeah,
and I've had the worst jobs. Like, So.
Yeah. And
I only started this YouTube stuff when I was like close. Like, it only started popping off when I was like 30, maybe 30. Really? Right.
So what did you do before that, Chris?
I had so many jobs. I've worked, warehouses. I've worked, I was a mover. I used to clean the toilets at a water park. This is great. Spice factory.
Cause I wanted to tell you you really did a wonderful job balancing in that video that I watched last night, where you were expressing yourself and being truthful with your fans. You didn't come across as whiny, and you didn't come across, you made people understand that you knew that you were fortunate to be able to do what you do. And I thought to myself, this guy has had some shitty jobs. He knows what it is to do real ugly work.
I feel bad for a lot of the kids nowadays that are instant millionaires, and they're a dime a dozen.
They got no grounding.
They have no grounding, and at the age of 17 or whatever, they're already making millions or whatever it is. And I'm just like, you've not even gone through it yet.
Yeah.
Like, you're going to crash hard.
Yeah, you have no idea what's coming.
Yeah, it's going to suck for a while.
You know who went through that? Justin Bieber.
Yeah.
You know?
He was one of the biggest cases of that.
Yeah, exactly. Like, yeah. We have to, let's continue. This is a fascinating, I think it's a fascinating conversation. Yeah. I'm really enjoying it. It's a great thing about a podcast, eh? You can just keep yammering on.
Yep.
But we will take a moment to thank our good friends at the Mersons. Just posted a nice picture today of Ted half asleep. And
what did you call it? End of the day needs to have that. End of the day hasn't had a nap, Ted. And that's what it was.
Yeah, he's got a look on his face like, hurry up, take the fucking picture. Anyway, we were at the Mersons because we hadn't seen Kara and Celso in a long time, and Charlie. And there's some new people at the Mersons, but they've been family for us for so long. The Mersons have been looking after Montrealer's cars for I don't know how long, and we've been doing their commercials for how long, because I got screwed years and years and years ago. I don't know anything about mechanics. I had to do the YouTube thing for the gas cap, so that gives you an idea of how much I know. And I got taken by a mechanic, and somebody said to me, probably 30 plus years ago now, you should have called the Mersons. And I said, who are the Mersons? I got introduced. That's the way they built their business. People tell other people about how good they are, how they don't do anything, you know, that they doesn't need doing. They're as honest as the day is long. They're family run. The owner is at the counter, and they can take care of everything. Transmissions, brakes. Yesterday, we had to have a quick fluid top up with the car we were driving, and they took care of it right away. Winter tires, store your winter tires, store your summer tires. I used to love that. I didn't have to put them in the garage and schlep the tires. I would just drive over and say, I'm ready to put my winters on. And they would take the summers off and store those, you know, for a charge, of course, but it's such a convenient thing. If you don't know anything about cars like me, the Mersons will look after you. Ask anybody who's been there before. You can look at them online, mersonauto.com, or you can go see them, corner of St. Jacques and Cavendish, and ask to see the owner. He's probably going to be standing right there at the counter.
Celso and Caro run the joint these days, the third generation of Mersons to run that business. What else you got?
Well, I want to talk about your nap.
Oh, boy.
The nap that you nearly did get when I took you to Mettre La Bonheur.
Yeah, I went out with Terry to Mettre La Bonheur's flagship store on, is it on Gouin? In Saint-Geneviève? Well, yeah,
it's actually the very, it's not their biggest store, but it's their very first store.
Yeah, and it's not far from La Roulotte. So if you want to check out a mattress and have a nap. La Roulotte's a good place to start. You have a couple of hot dogs and some French fries. Get all loaded up with those carbs. It'll tire you out. I needed a new duvet. And so we went over to Mettre La Bonheur, and it was like Kevin, who runs that store, fitted me for that like he was fitting me for a pair of shoes. I actually laid down on one of the beds in the display room, and he put the comforter, the duvet, on
tucked
top of me. He tucked me in,
yep,
basically.
He did.
He tucked me in, and I took it out for a test nap, and it was the right one for me.
Mattresses, bedding, anything that has to do with a good night's sleep, they'll look after you like nobody else.
With a personal touch. Yeah. Well, it doesn't get much more personal than tucking you in, does
yeah,
it?
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. There are 17 stores around the island in the greater Montreal area. You can find a location near you at matelabonheur.ca. And don't forget the promo code discount. They will offer you up to 10% off with the promo code Terry. Just type it in or tell them at the store. We're having a conversation with, yes, Ted?
Let's do the tweet sheet just for fun. Yeah.
You have to tell Chris all about
it. Well, I mentioned this to Chris before we started. The tweet sheet, don't look at it!
I saw the word choke. That's all I saw.
The tweet sheet is something that I do on the daily radio show on Light 106.7, where I do, I read three funny tweets on the air, three I think are funny. And I inevitably come across some that you can't use on the radio because of CRTC regulations. So we save those for the podcast. And I've curated three with you in mind, Chris. I thought, okay, I think he'll laugh at these. So let's see how it goes. All right, shall we? Let's start it off here. From Ash at Ash May Bite. Is choke fuck hyphenated? I need to get this Christian Mingle bio just right.
Wow.
Yeah. Wow.
Ash May Bite.
Yep.
On Twitter. I believe so.
Yeah.
Every time I've used it, I threw a hyphen in there. Yeah, I do believe so. It is funny that it's on Christian Mingle.
Yeah.
Those are the dirtiest people, aren't they?
They really are. Yeah. When it comes right down to it.
Yeah.
From at Jason Jasonsons, are you a tits or an ass man? Me, about to fuck the half a mannequin I found behind Denny's. I like a sense of humor.
That's very funny.
That's that very one's funny. For my mom.
That's so good.
That's awful.
That's mom. A great answer.
Sorry, Mom. Mom watches the podcast.
Jasonson?
Yeah, I don't think this is her favorite part.
No.
And from at I Love Pie 84, please discreetly shove a bottle rocket up my ass before I get cremated. That'd be a show, eh?
Well, it reminds me of when Bruce Hills was here and he talked about the comedian from England.
That's right.
That shoved a Roman candle up his ass and came out on stage half naked with a Roman candle in his ass.
Which direction?
At the Just for Laughs comedy. Yeah.
to Ethel Merman's There's No Show Business.
There's No Business Like Show Business.
Yeah. Yeah. Chris, did you start out as a kid who liked magic? Is that where the roots of this are?
Yeah, my grandpa showed me my first trick.
Oh, really? That's very cool.
When I was a youngin', but it never really, I never thought like, wow, I'm going to be a magician. I gave that about as much thought as becoming a pirate. Like there's no, I didn't know it was a job. I thought you had to be gifted, right?
Yeah.
But I always picked up little tricks here and there and would enjoy like tricking my parents or my brothers. And then when I got to high school, I saw David Blaine's first special. And I remember it was a street magic. And it was the first time that these magicians or this magician would do magic to regular people out in the street. And it wasn't some fancy David Copperfield or anything. It was just a card trick. And the person would go running and they would freak out. I remember, watching this, I'd have to catch reruns because I'd have no way of recording it and just trying to reverse engineer everything he did, all the card tricks, and eventually figured out like pretty much all of them. So from there, I just practice and then, fool my friends at school. And then just kind of stuck with me until I bartended for a few years and I really, really got my chops up there because, drunk people, low lighting, loud music, very forgiving atmosphere to practice. And so doing that a few years, and then that's where it really just kind of took off.
Terry.
Go ahead, Ted.
Live performances are part of your stock and trade as well as the online stuff. How would you break that down percentage wise? How much live performing do you do?
Very little. It used to be part of my main income doing performances. And it wasn't so much stage, it was walk around. So I would get hired for corporate cocktail hours. Mm. And I'd book a whole season and make really good money doing that. But eventually, working with YouTube and everything else, it didn't make sense to me that I would go out of my way to go to this
place.
It was
just that much more lucrative to work on YouTube.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Okay. It cost me more money going to do these gigs.
What about like theater shows?
So theater shows, I've never done a solo theater show. I've never had enough stage material. But Wes, as you know, he's a touring magician. That's what he does for a living. Colleges and universities across Canada, the United States.
So he's less online than you are?
He's less online, forcibly so, because I think what happened, like he's definitely online, but he's just, what pays the bills is the stage shows and everything.
Yeah.
And
plus, so he can travel for free because his wife's a
exactly,
yeah.
Exactly. So I often tag along with him.
Yeah.
I'll tag along with him and just, open for him or do a 20-minute or whatever. And it's enough for me to, like, practice my new material, my stuff. But I'm in a fortunate position where I don't have to rely on, performing. The older I get, it's kind of funny, but I'm kind of, like, leaning more into performing on stage and doing comedy and stuff like that because I feel like it's just more fulfilling to a certain extent.
I was going to ask you if it's more fun than doing the. I guess it's different.
There's nothing better, I think, than actual.
It's so gratifying when there's just something about when you're in front of a group of people and you can make them laugh. And there's something so gratifying about.
And with magic, it's in the same way where you make you get this sense of wonder and you get to see what they're like
you're doing both you're giving them that sense of wonder and you're making them laugh at the same time
and that human interaction is just so vital and important and any performer or anybody who's done any stage time or even anybody who does podcasts when you talk to someone you connect with other people it's just so much better than sitting in front of a camera by yourself
What were you doing when the internet light went off? What job were you doing where you went wait a minute. I should do this now.
I was a sales rep for a German cement company. They were a mortar company. I was their PR rep for North America, and that was my job, and I hated it.
And what did you do? What was the video that you put up?
Well, it wasn't actually a video. It was I was doing a lot of magic at the time, and like I was posting little things for the magic community, this and that. But it was more getting away from that corporate life into pursuing magic.
It was more about the pursuit of magic than it was getting on the
Exactly. Yeah. I could do something that allowed me to do more magic.
Right.
And so I would host these clients from this company, right? And take them out to dinner. I was like the PR rep. Yeah. And then I would start performing and I would hold court, 12 people or whatever, and I'd just make them laugh and make all this stuff. And then they'd start booking me for their own corporate events.
Okay, cool.
And I just started getting booked more. And I was like, oh, this is nice. I could just do this. Then I was doing that. And then that's when, you know, they caught wind of me online. The magic company said, come work with us. And
do you speak German?
I do, yeah.
You do, eh? Mm-hmm. Right, because your father was in Germany.
Yep, and yep. My mother's German. I was born in Germany.
Yeah. Oh, your mom's German?
Yep.
Yeah?
So that's how you became a rep for a German company?
It helped.
It helped, yeah.
It helped, yeah. I was actually working at a tile shop up north. And so I started in knowing nothing about tiles in the warehouse, worked my way up to sales. But then to sell the product, I was like, I need to know the product. So I started installing tiles, learned how to install, telling clients, like, I'll do it. I can do it. And I had no idea what I was doing and I'd learn it. And then I learned the products. And then I told my boss one day and I was like, hey man, I want to be a rep for your company. I can go out on the road. You know, I don't want to be selling tiles here. I'm like the best salesman you got. And he's like, all right, what do you want? And I remember saying like $50,000 a year. And I remember him laughing in my face. Being like, there's no way, no reps make 50, and laughing in my face. I'm like, well, give me the number that I need to achieve in sales to make $50,000. Like, I mean, don't just. And so I wrote to this other company, this company that we were dealing with, and you know, they offered me like 70 to go work for them. So I was like, yeah, I'm gone. Peace out.
And do you speak French as well, Chris?
Yeah.
Are you
so it's only three languages?
Only, yeah.
Yeah. Could you possibly make me feel any more inadequate in any more ways?
Are you handy?
I am. Yeah.
Okay, there you go.
I'm out of here. But not as much as I was. Not as much as
but
I was.
But you can build stuff and hammer and nail and open a gas cap.
Yeah.
Yeah. There you go. Yeah. We need to ask Chris about Area 52 and your fascination with UFOs and alien life forms and remote viewing.
Remote viewing,
what
yeah.
is remote viewing? Awesome.
Remote viewing is the ability to see without seeing or perceive something that has or hasn't happened in the future past or in any space-time continuum in this whole world. Like, so it all started with this project called Project Stargate, which was in 1975, went on for 20 years. It was funded by the government to study extrasensory perception or psychic ability.
The government being which government?
United States government. Okay. They caught wind of the Soviets doing this for a while and said, well, during the Cold War, and they're like, we don't want to be left out, so might as well throw some money in here and see what happens. And then the project went on for 20 years. It had a bunch of names before then that also got canceled. You know, a lot of people speculate that it's still going on. They just shut down that project and opened another one, something they do a lot. But yeah, it was interesting. I've always been fascinated with this type of stuff, you know, unsolved mysteries. And I was always just as a kid, like, wow, there's got to be more out there. So when I started looking into this, I read a few books and then got an interview with some of the people that worked the project. One of which, Joe McMonagall, who was remote viewer number 001, he was the first soldier they trained as a psychic. And his stories are fascinating. They're like, they seem unbelievable, you know, but he has all the evidence and all the proof and they declassified a bunch of this stuff. So you can see it for yourself. It's pretty spectacular. And again, it's just my fascination with mystery as a magician, as somebody who's,
can you explain it more? I don't understand. So the government trains this guy and he sees what?
So you perceive things in your mind.
Yeah. We're talking like Kreskin? Is that you, that kind of thing?
Not entirely like Kreskin, okay. But more like. You would have a piece of paper and a pen. Yeah. You'd be sat in a room with no windows. There would be a monitor in front of you, and the target is double blind, so the monitor and yourself have no idea what the target is. They would say begin, and they would give you a random number, like 8-digit number, has nothing to do with anything, but it's attached to the target, and so they have the target. And now you're going to perceive what it is you see in your mind attached to this target. And so you start drawing. So I see a building. It feels cold. Here, this feels like it might be here. Boom. And you'd draw a scenario. You'd write things. And then they'd compare it to the target. And Joe McMonagall, I mean, his targets, when he did his first test for the CIA, when he was hired, he had five first place placements So a one-for-one match out of the five first targets.
So a target being a military target.
Lot of times they would put someone in the world and say, where are they? What are they doing?
Okay.
And without any information, the remote viewer was able to tell specifically where they were and what they were doing.
And the military would apply that as military intelligence.
Exactly.
Wow.
Yeah. And is there a direct tie-in with remote viewing and UFOs? Aliens?
So,
or are they two separate things?
So a lot of the remote viewers that were tasked with remote viewing targets, some of the targets they got were of otherworldly origin. And they had to remote view those targets as well. There's one that stands out, and this, again, is available online if you go into the CIA archives. But Joe McMonagle was at the Monroe Research Institute, where they study sleep, outer body experiences, stuff like that. And the CIA had hired this Monroe Institute to do a lot of studying on this stuff for research and intel purposes. But one evening, the DOD, Department of Defense, comes in, hands Bob Monroe an envelope, a sealed envelope with coordinates on him. There's a bunch of different coordinates. And he says, while he's in this sort of state where he's kind of between sleep and not, ask Joe to remote view this target. So he gives him the target reference numbers, which are just coordinates. And Joe starts going. He's like, okay. He's like, it's like a desert. And it's like giant. I'm in a giant pyramid with the first location, massive pyramid, way bigger than Giza. Maybe you can fit three of them in there. It's so huge. He's like, the sun looks funny. He's like, all right, go inside. And he's like, oh, there's people here, but they're like 12 feet tall. They look like us. It's like very strange. He doesn't like these woo-woo targets either. And he's like, he's giving them all this information. And it's like, it's describing this civilization within these giant pyramids. He opens the envelope afterwards, and the target was Mars 1 million years BC. And so that scared the shit out of him. And he was like, whoa. So he took those coordinates, went to a JPL, Jet Propulsion Lab, and asked them. He's like, hey, I want the pictures to these coordinates. And the guy at JPL goes, oh, you mean the city on Mars? Jokingly. And he hands him a stack of photos. And the photos matched up to his descriptions of the coordinates. There on one photo is a picture of a crater, and beside it is a 2,000-foot-high pyramid. You can see it on the photo. It's like it's casting a 2.5-inch shadow off the negative. And he's like, and he even asked the guy, and he goes, how is it possible that this pyramid is there, this structure is there, that would have been blown away by whatever impacted that had to come after? And the guy goes, in his words, he goes, that must have grown there. I don't know. And that was his word. So a lot of really, really strange stuff when you start talking about these secret programs. A lot of them talk about the sort of crossover between remote viewing and the UFO space, especially now all the information coming out with disclosure in the United States.
And this is all online in CIA archives?
Yeah, you can go to CIA.gov in the archives.
I would be terrified.
Yeah, well, I can't tear myself CIA away.
It's declassified.
Is it?
Yeah, it's declassified. There's a lot of classified stuff that you can't look up. Like, so SRI, Stanford Research Institute, who conducted all these tests for the CIA, very prestigious. They had over 20 years, they did 505 individual missions for the government. Now, there are 19 agencies in the United States government. 17 of those agencies came back with new missions over the course of the next 20 years. So if that doesn't say there's something there, you know what I mean? For 20 years, like for you funding this year after year, this had to go through a Senate subcommittee. This had to go through all these channels to be renewed every year. And this somehow, you know, and then they dismissed it in a 60 Minutes interview. They were like, no, it never worked or whatever, which is wild to say, you know. But
so do you believe that we have company?
In that regard, I don't dismiss it. I don't know where the company's from. We have evidence. The guy who headed OSAP, which is like the program to study UFOs for the government, their own program that came public a few years ago. Well, the guy who headed that just had an interview a few days ago and confirmed that we have retrieved a craft and we have broken the hull. We've gotten inside. That's all he's
Who's
willing
done
to say.
That?
the U.S. government.
The U.S.
Well,
government.
There was something in the news within the last several months about. Is that what we're talking about?
It's part of the same program.
Is that declassified?
So him saying it now makes it sort of declassified. Okay. But he can't say much, and he went on an interview, and he talked about it for a little, but he said, yeah, he's like, I can confirm we do have that.
Christ, that's the last thing the world needs is fucking aliens.
Well, here's the thing. We don't know if they're aliens. That's the other thing.
Oh, okay.
So that's the one thing they won't say, because
it isn't necessarily otherworldly. It could be...
Well, it could be interdimensional is what a lot of them are leaning towards.
Interdimensional.
Yeah, that they're sort of here, but just on another plane of existence, and I know it's a big pill to swallow. And then other people believe that they might be that they might have been here long before us.
Really?
I have a question. Sorry. When they say interdimensional, does that mean that they're in another plane of existence, but at the same location?
Yeah.
So they're on Earth right now, but another Earth.
Yeah. It's like I think Carl Sagan had this explanation. So like, you can see my shadow here, right?
Mm-hmm.
All right. That's a two-dimensional reality.
Yes.
That shadow can't see up. Right, it can't see down. It can only see on this two-dimensional plane, right? So it lives very happily knowing its existence, right? But it doesn't see my hand. In fact, it doesn't see all of us having a conversation here, even talking about it. The shadow doesn't see any of that. Now, if I were to go like this, all the shadow would see maybe is this line appearing, being like, oh, my God, look at this line. That's amazing. How did it appear? And it wouldn't know that it's attached to a human hand going like this, right? Mm-hmm. And if I somehow picked up the shadow and showed him up and down, he wouldn't even be able to explain to the rest of the shadow people what up is. If no concept of it, right? No idea what it is. It would blow his mind to even try and understand that. And so when you think of alternate dimensions or higher dimensions, and a lot of quantum physicists are looking into this now, is that there may be a fourth, fifth, sixth, seventh, and so on and so forth, and we just might be the shadow or reflection cast by the higher dimension. And that's sort of what they're realizing now.
Did you do well in school?
I did okay.
Because you have a giant brain. No, you do. I mean, you have an unbelievable curiosity, and you dig deep.
Dude, if they taught this in school, I would have done a lot better. Yeah.
What sparked your interest in this?
In this stuff,
yeah.
I remember seeing Fire in the Sky as a kid, old movie about an abduction, scared the shit out of me. Very scary movie, but based on a true story, Travis Walton, and he still tells this story, still sticks to the story to this day, that he got picked up and he was on a table with these aliens around him, and they dropped him off, and he was missing for 4 days. His friends seen the craft. They seen him lift up into it. It made national news. It was like 40 years ago. And this guy was like he's working in the woods. He's like a lumberjack or something. He has no reason to lie. He lost all of his, other friends, his family. He was ridiculed. Like, there was no reason for him to lie, but he didn't want attention.
I'm not being flippant, but my question is, why is it that when aliens come for people, they're always finding people in the woods or rural areas?
Mm.
Is it so that they don't draw attention?
I mean, whatever explanation you can come up with is probably fine. I mean, I don't know, but I would assume, yeah,
never,
maybe.
Never anybody, kidnapped from a Lexus Neon.
Yeah, no.
You know what I mean?
Yeah,
it's
I
weird.
Mean,
it's weird.
Maybe an easier target. I have no idea.
Possibly.
You ever see the Twilight Zone episode, To Serve Man?
Maybe. What's this one about?
It's about aliens who come down to Earth, and they've got a book, and it's called To Serve Man.
Mm.
And the perception among humans is that it's like the aliens' Bible, and they're here to serve us and to make life better. And they take people aboard their spaceship and take them to their planet as part of their service, ostensible service to them, and somebody figures out at some point that it's a cookbook to serve men. And they're taking them back and fucking eating them.
That's amazing.
And at the very end, the guy who's figured it out is people are going up the steps of the spaceship. Yeah, and he's going, it's a cookbook! It's a cookbook!
That's amazing. That's very Twilight Zone. I love that so
much.
Yeah,
if you YouTube that, you'll probably find
that
the episode.
That is great.
Twilight Zone, To Serve Man.
Going to take a second to thank our, not our last two sponsors, but for this episode, a couple of quick nods, including a new sponsor we're glad to welcome called AccuTech Electric. I got this call from Tom and Trish. We had a phone conversation. Then we had a Zoom meeting. And one of the things I said to Tom was, how could we possibly help you? Ted and I don't know anything about this. And he said, I want you to tell people about us. I want you to tell people that I am a second-generation master electrician, that my father set up this business 25 years ago, that it's a family-run Montreal business, that they have really, really strong values with their staff, that they have a supportive working environment, that they foster the right attitude, that they're professionals, they do quality service for their customers, whether they be residential, commercial, or industrial. They specialize in high-end and residential renovations. They can guide you through that. If you run a company and you want to try changing your lighting and save money with hydro, they can guide you through those programs that are available. And they also wanted me to say that safety is a top priority for every job they do. They can help you save money. They can help you get safe. And they can help you run your business more efficiently. And when it comes to electric, you want to make sure that you have the pros, people that know exactly what they're doing. If you've got those kinds of needs, you want to get in touch with AccuTech Electric, A-C-U-T-E-C-H, AccuTech.ca. Let that family look after your needs when it comes to either business needs or needs for home, or if you're building a new project, they would love to help you. Tell them the two knuckleheads sent you.
You figure better a master electrician than an amateur enthusiast?
Yes, sir. I do, in fact.
I flew exactly a kite in a thunderstorm one time.
Yeah. Let me get my screwdriver. Today you will whisk me away out of these beautiful studios, Ted, in your Range Rover Evoque.
The Range Rover Evoque, which was supplied to us by Jaguar Land Rover Laval. Every time Terry comes to town to do the podcast, they give me a courtesy vehicle to ferry him to and fro. That's another family-owned and family-operated business, which Terry and I tend to favor. Nino and Renato DiCubellis are the proprietors of Jaguar Land Rover Laval, and Adrian McGrath is their marketing director. I'm going to tell the story again about how I charmed Adrian into becoming our sponsor. I called her up one day before we started the podcast, when we just had the seed of the idea, and I called up Adrian and I said, Adrian, I just passed a beautiful Jaguar on the highway, and it made me think of you, not because it was a Jaguar, but because it was beautiful.
Nicely
and she said, horse shit. But then I talked to her about Terry and I are starting a podcast and we're looking for a car dealer as a sponsor. And she said, don't you dare
go anywhere else
or sign with anybody else until I talk to Nino and Renato. And she spoke to them, and we've had a longstanding relationship with them going back at least 20 years. And they said, yes, we're on board. And as well as sponsors, they've become good friends. And that's the way we like to do it. JaguarLaval.com and LandRoverLaval.com. If you are in the market for an upscale luxury vehicle, don't you dare buy anything else until you go to Jaguar Land Rover Laval and see what they have to offer.
Chris, how do you organize your day? I know, you've got other responsibilities at home. And it's certainly not 9 to 5. So, how do you organize in and around what you need to do at home versus what you need to do in the studio? Is it like, okay, Monday I'm going to do this? Is it the same every day? Is it different every day? Like, how do you do it?
It's kind of the same. We do have a schedule at work, so I try to keep it. I know everybody else needs a schedule.
Yeah.
Where I could just wing it and I'll be fine. Yeah. But I know other people need structure in their lives, for their personal lives and stuff. So, we're usually like Monday to Thursday. And then, we'll get all our stuff done. And then Fridays, Friday and weekends are off. And so I come in alone Friday and I do some video game streaming for like a gaming channel that I have and get some odds and ends done. But yeah, we got a Monday to Friday and I got, you know, we got the personal gym at the office. So, nice. That, you know, people
you
can work
see
out.
The studio,
and,
that building is just, it's really something else. You. It's like an amusement park.
Yeah.
Almost.
And
yeah.
You were telling us off before we started the podcast that you were able to attend something downtown with your conjoint and that it, you know, it was fun and you were telling us about it. Like, how do you plan that or are you able to say, okay, Thursday night we're going to do this? Or is it just haphazard? You know what I mean?
I would say, it's pretty haphazard. Yeah. I'm a pretty easygoing guy when it comes to scheduling. I've never been a real stickler for, this has to be like 9 to 5 or this or that. I'm pretty loose when it comes to that stuff. And same goes for when I'm traveling, like when I'm filming videos. I just got back from Spain. I went to Japan this year. You know, we're traveling quite a bit, and a lot of times I'll just book it a couple weeks ahead and be like, you know what, this could be a good video, and I'll just head out there and film it. Yeah.
Nice to have that freedom, eh?
It is, yeah. It really is. I can't complain about that, that's for sure. Yeah.
I don't know how to thank you. I'll be honest with you, I was apprehensive because I thought I don't know anything about this shit. And then Ted said, well, that's why we're having the podcast.
Yeah.
And you've just been a terrific guest. I could talk to you for hours.
Thanks, man.
It's just really, really fascinating. Great to meet you, too.
Likewise.
And let's, not that you need our help, our little local podcast, but let's talk about where people can find you.
Yeah, I mean, check me out on YouTube. So yeah. Chris Ramsey 52 or just Chris Ramsey on YouTube. If not, you can check out my podcast with my co-host, Wes Barker, which is called Bottom of the Barrel Podcast, also available.
Bottom of the Barrel. Yeah. Bottom of the Great theme song.
Yeah, good, catchy tune. Yeah. It's available on YouTube and also, you know, wherever you get your podcasts.
You can get merch, too, eh?
You can get merch, too. We got merch at first.shop if you want the merch. But all that's on my channel. Okay. You can go check it out.
All right.
Yep.
Where'd you go, Ted?
And I was just over there talking to Poseidon.
All right, thank you, Poseidon.
Oh, yeah, Poseidon's here. What's up?
Yeah.
Had to wake him up for a second.
No. We weren't born yet.
Everything is under control. Okay. What?
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 Thank you. Where'd you go, Ted? Is everything okay over there?
Yeah, everything's fine. All right, yeah, okay. It's all under control.
Thought
don't
maybe
worry.
Something caught fire or something.
No, sir, no problem. No problem whatsoever. Everything's okay.
Chris, thank you.
Thank you guys for having me. I really, really enjoyed the conversation and hope to be back again.
Standing by, the Terry and Ted podcast has been brought to you by the UPS Store Canada. The UPS Store near you is locally owned and operated by a member of your small business community.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.